Lockdown didn't work in South Africa. Why it shouldn't happen again? That's the title of a paper published in The Conversation, authored by three people. Benjamin Smart from the University of Johannesburg, Herculas Kombrick, who's a research coordinator, data science support specialist, as well as Alex Broadband, who's the director of the Institute for the Future of Knowledge and professor of philosophy at the University of Johannesburg, who joins us now via Zoom. Alex, a very good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Why didn't it work, do you think, the hard lockdown that was announced by the government?
Well, what we found was that as we went into lockdown and went through several subsequent changes, there simply wasn't a change in the rate of infections, which one could attribute to a change of regulations. So that's hidden by the fact that that infections were, of course, increasing exponentially. But if you look at that rate on a logarithmic scale, which is the way that one should, what one sees is a straight line. So the rate at which the pandemic was growing didn't seem to change until well into level three, which is not what you'd expect if it was having an effect. We suspect this is because when people are living in very overcrowded conditions, as many people in the country are, it just simply doesn't mean the same thing to lock down as it does when one is in a suburb, which is, you know, a minority of people in South Africa, but a majority in countries where the lockdown regulations were really pushed from by international organizations. So we suspect that it simply didn't achieve the social distancing. You know, locking down, staying home doesn't achieve social distancing when homes are very overcrowded, living conditions are very overcrowded, people are queuing for social grants, queuing for food parcels, and all of these sorts of things.
What do you make then of studies and reports that as a result of the hard lockdown announced by the administration, we saved 16,000 people from dying?
I don't see the evidence for those claims. I simply don't think people have properly assessed lockdown. So what we have been trying to do is assess the effects, both direct and indirect effects of COVID-19. This is a project at the Institute for the Future of Knowledge, working with the Center for Global Development and in South Africa and in some other countries as well. And to assess the effects, you first of all got to look and see what those effects are. And so what you do is you say, well, were there any changes in the rate of infection, first of all, which we could attribute to a change in regulation? That's how you look for changes. You look for things that changed when we made an intervention, when we changed our regulations. And there simply aren't any. There is a sharp change around the 27th of March, which is pretty much the day that lockdown started. But that can't be due to lockdowns because it's too soon. That was probably, we think, though we can't be sure about that, due to things that happened, initially, the initial mitigation strategies, which do seem to have had an effect. But above and beyond that, it's just simply, you know, there simply isn't an effect there to be attributed to lockdown that we can see. Now, you know, one can, of course, argue that it would have been very different had there been no lockdown, but then one needs to make that case. I mean, what you see is what you know, if you look at the line, and this graph is in our paper as well as in our conversation piece, and you took away the indications that said when lockdown regulations came in, you wouldn't be able to tell, you know, that's a change in direction. That's probably when level four came in. And then during level three, when it ought to have gone out of control, if lockdown was working, it actually tailed off halfway through. So as I say, these things are hard to spot because the shape is obviously a curve. It's an exponential curve. But if you use a scale that allows you to plot that as a straight line, you can see it much more clearly. So, my response is simply that I think that the case really has to be made by people like the World Health Organization and who are praising actions that were taken, that the case has to be made that the praise is based on evidence.
The Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, yesterday gazetting her decision to extend the national state of disaster by another month to the 15th of November, noting that the reason she's done this is so that government can put in place measures to, mitigate against a second wave. We're seeing second waves, in inverted commas, being reported in many countries around the world. And you argue in your paper that currently, there's very little reason to fear a severe second wave in South Africa. Why?
Well, if we are right in our analysis, and there's always some degree of uncertainty, but if we are right that the reason for this is simply that that social distancing of a large scale wasn't achieved by lockdown over mitigation, then undoing it won't create conditions that would enable a second wave, because those conditions have already been in place. I mean, we've been through it, so to speak. The cases rose sharply and then fell again, all during level three, and continued to fall just as sharply as they'd been rising during level two. So there's no reason to think that they're going to just suddenly start going up again, unless it's due to some entirely external factor. Where people have been worried internationally is where they unlock and then cases go up. We've had the opposite experience. We've unlocked and cases have gone down. So there's no reason to think that that unlocking further is going to make them go up again, because that's just not what has actually happened. It's possible there is a quote unquote second wave for entirely other reasons, some sort of seasonal effect or something, which is not something we've considered or talk about. But the thing that's driving the fear of a second wave in Europe, in particular, simply doesn't apply, because, as I say, the effect of unlocking, if you're, it's not the effect of unlocking, but if you were just to look at the effect, the line, the graph, it looks like unlocking was followed by a reduction in infections, not an increase.
A lot of people following the reports in Cape Town of a party that was taking place at Tin Roof, which is a nightclub in Claremont, one of the suburbs in Cape Town, resulting now in 73 people testing positive for COVID-19, 37 of whom are matriculants who should be sitting down for an exam come the 5th of November. They look at that incident and say, you see, that's why a curfew is important, where between midnight and 4 o'clock we're not allowed outside, and that these nightclubs are supposed to close at midnight. And yet other people are making an argument to open up more of the economy and to allow us to take responsibility for our own health as opposed to imposing restrictions. Where on the spectrum do you lie, Alex?
I think that one has to be clear that doing something is not—it's not an all or nothing. We're comparing against doing some kind of mitigation measures, and I think having a large party in the middle of a pandemic is basically stupid. And I don't think I don't think that can necessarily be taken as a model. What we need is a degree of common sense. So doing something is a good idea. Having a lockdown and locking down the economy is a much, much larger thing, and much, much more severe thing. One can avoid large parties and still have a working economy. So I think one should set aside cases of pretty much stupidity from what reasonable people would accept, which is, we have some degree of mitigation measures, which do protect people. But the question is, over and above that, are we offered further protection by a hard, closing down of large chunks of the economy? And one has to be fine grained about what bits of, what measures one actually imposes. But I do think that, I do think, as I say, that there's just, there is no case that I've seen that further step of really preventing bits of the economy from working, offers significant or indeed any benefits over, the initial things that were put in place very sensibly on the 15th of March, where we were urged to, stay distant and you can have, venues operating at a more socially distanced level and so forth. I think that kind of measure is sustainable over a longer term. And from what we can see in the South African context, it's just not clear that there are further benefits to be obtained by a much, much harder lockdown. Now, as I say, there could be a case made on the basis of evidence that actually the line would not have been straight had we not locked down. It would have gone rocketing up. But there just has not been any such case, and it's very hard to see why it should be that way.
Well, Alex, thank you very much. It's an important read. I will direct you to the conversation. The title of the piece is written, Lockdown Didn't Work in South Africa, Why It Shouldn't Happen Again. And Alex Broadbent was one of the co-authors of that paper. He's a director of the Institute for the Future of Knowledge, as well as professor of philosophy at the University of Johannesburg.